from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper. You are live from the Path.
I am working man, I get things done. Work for the Holy Ghost, work for the Son. I am working man, oh yes I am.
And you're listening to Live from the Path. We're joining from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. Hey man, Nick Harris is right, Mike. You look terrible. What the heck ever? What is he?
What now?
I'm just saying, Nick Harris says you don't look right, and I agree.
This show is about honest faith, fierce grace, and other stuff. And I'm bringing the honest faith tonight. This is what I look like.
Booba, what are you bringing?
Oh, absolutely nothing.
Okay, good. Tell it. All right. Thanks for joining us on Life from the Path. All right, Mike, what do we, you were doing the docket. What do we got on the docket today?
Here's the thing. There's all kinds of stuff. One, we got a list put together of Christian articles that shouldn't be written anymore.
Wait a minute. Give me an example.
Well, they're stupid. You know what I'm saying? There could be no possible content to them.
Like it's over. They're either overdone or they shouldn't ever have been done. Is that the thing?
Yeah, it's like Christian gossip. There's not even any meat. It's like someone waving a bag of potato chips that they personally blew up and are holding the top closed so it appears as if the potato chip bag is full of chips, but it is not. This is what these articles are.
Hey, man, the kids are trying to pull that stuff on me all the time with a juice box. Hey, Dad, I got a full juice box. You want to take a drink? And then I go in there and they try to take a heft of it, and it's full of hot air, and they have a gas at me. And they think it's real funny.
You've raised unfunny children. That seems to be your fault.
No, that's a solid point. Okay, fair enough. Carry on. What else are we doing?
We're also doing top 10 things I wish worship leaders would stop saying. This we'll read the list, and then I will possibly add it to the Christian articles that shouldn't be written anymore. So maybe we should read that one first, and then I will decipher whether it should be on the other one.
Okay. That's a good point. Actually, okay, just dig right into that one.
Okay. We also have some Dear Life from the Path.
Okay.
Coming, which is, as you know, full of worldly trouble solved by Jesus' grace. Most likely referenced through Romans 5:3. You know what I'm saying, Nick Harris?
Yep.
Top 10 things I wish worship leaders would stop saying. Oh, boy.
I like this already.
Number one.
Okay.
Or number 10. It's probably in descending order. 10. Are we ready to have fun this morning? The answer is probably not. The truth is, when this is your welcome at the start of the music time, it tells me where your head's at. Nobody goes to church to have a bad time, of course, and I'm sure plenty of people go to have fun, but is this the point of worship?
Hey, now, I mean, isn't that true for anybody that's ever used that phrase, though? Hey, are we ready to have fun? Yeah, like, they always assume everyone's there to have fun.
Yeah, and no one likes that. You know what I'm saying? You feel like you're at the Showbiz Pizza, or one of them whatever animatronic pizza joints that you go to when you're a kid, like the Chuck Cheese.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a cheesy way to say something. Although, on the other hand, if you find this offensive, I mean, you're a bit on the cranky side.
Yeah, it's stupid to be pissed about it, but the thing is, because it's cheap. It's cheap because, like, you got to be in a real rough situation for that not to work out, and so you're looking for, like, instant gratification. It's narcissism is what it is. Like, you want people to say, hey, we're going to have a good, everybody here have a good time, and you know people are there to have a good time in general, and so it's an immediate yes. You give them something that they can't disagree with without looking stupid, and it provides validation for you.
That's true. A guy that's like, No, I'm not here to have a good time.
Yeah.
I mean, you just brought the whole party down, bro.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, okay. So, I mean, it's wrong for the dude to say it. I don't know if it, I mean, I am at church to have a good time. Jesus is there, but I'm maybe not in the hoot and hollering way that guy's kind of saying.
Yeah, I that one's a non-starter for me.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
Number 9, how's everybody feeling?
Yeah, I really hate group questions.
Yeah, that's true, because you can't respond honestly, because you're bullied by the group.
Yeah, right?
What if you're feeling like crap and you're like, black crap, and everyone's like, yay! Yeah. Like, you got to tone down your, I don't feel great.
Hey there, how's everybody feeling out there? I'm really in the dumps, man! Like, what do you... Because, first of all, you can't answer for the group. Second of all, it's awkward to ask one question to 75 people. And third of all, you can have no reaction from the stage to it. So if I say I'm down in the dumps, what am I supposed to carry on a conversation with you?
Yeah, you know who's king of this? And this is what drives me crazy about politicians in general. Is politicians talk like this, you know? Like, you listen to them give a speech and they're like, and I'm going to get my new tax form through because I will be the president of the United States. You know, they say it just like that. I'm like, well, yeah. You know, you could have just said it regular, you know, like, I'm going to get my tax reform through because I think it's best for you, and then waited for applause. But that's not what they do. They start slowing their words down and, like, pounding something, and I'm like, you're forcing me to have a reaction to what you've just said that I wouldn't have normally had, right? They're gearing up to an applause or something that I normally wouldn't have felt, and I feel like they're kind of tricking me into it.
Yeah,
I don't like it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The hedge on the first three is, like, I don't like to be jacked with. Don't, if you're gonna lead worship, don't jack with me.
Right, just let me be.
Yeah. Okay. What's the next one?
Number 8. You can do better than that, or some other form of nagging about how we're not seeing or participating to your liking. It's never really on my mind at a church service to think of ways to impress the worship leader.
Well, so I don't know that that's the premise of it. Like, what if you, What if you people stink? What if they're not singing at all? Are you saying it's not the worship leader's deal to try to get you to join in, or just not in that way? Because, like, his premise is that makes it sound like the worship leader shouldn't do that at all. Like, but if you're leading someone into worship, like, we might have quibbles on how you lead them into worship, but, like, I feel like that's kind of his deal.
I mean, do you feel like it's a call where you can go, you could worship better than that? Like, is there bad worship? Is there, like, a guy that just don't do it right?
Well, the thing about this way, what's a biblical example of bad worship?
Naked David.
No, I think the Lord enjoyed that.
That's what I'm saying. If that's not bad, I don't know what is.
I desired mercy, not sacrifice. He wouldn't accept their worship. So, heart's bad. Bad intention of the heart, I guess. I don't know.
Asking God.
Well, yeah, I suppose if you're sitting there singing about asking him for cash,
that's right.
People are saying, yeah, holy, holy, and you're like, can I borrow some money? I mean, yeah, I mean, I didn't care if I'm with you. Rough
times. Asking God for cash. I like it. yeah, that's no good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, actually, I don't know the right answer to that. Like, I don't know if you're a worship leader and you're in front of 75 people, because that's my operating number, and I mean, they're just phoning it in. I mean, I suppose the right thing is just to remind them who they're dealing with. And if, frankly, if they're going to pass in, you know, if they're going to pass in margarine when God's looking for sweet cream butter, that's kind of their problem. But I don't know if you can drag it out of them by, you know,
coercion,
belligerence and coercion.
I agree.
Coercion. Next.
Number 7. I can't hear you. Response, well, maybe turn the volume down. We can't hear us either.
What the...
he's old.
Yep. What a codger, man.
Yeah, I have never heard a worship leader say this. Like, it wasn't, once again, it's not like inviting you to worship and telling you, like, here's how I see good worship leaders do this, right? Is like, they remind you of what you've already agreed to, right? Like, they remind you that God is king and God is good. And of all the things that he's provided for us and the grace you've been given. And like, when your mind starts to think about that, you worship, right? That's just what you do. If you understand what those gifts are and what he's saying, then you will worship on your own. A poor worship leader attempts to prod you into group participating better than you're doing right now.
Yeah.
Like, that's not worship leading. It's worship coercement and to no gain, right? Like, what's the benefit of, like, sing louder or I can't hear you or, you know, whatever. Like, there's no benefit to anything there.
Yeah, really. You might as well, if you're going to be honest, just say, hey, put on a facade. At least act like you're worshiping Jesus so we don't look silly here.
Yeah, put the suit on and everything. Don't just show up to do nothing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the root of all that stuff. Hey, guess what? I didn't tell you, but you're the voice. You're the voice to the Bible reading priest over there. So, like, you see the camera's on the priest. No,
that's me right here.
Yeah, that's you right there. Me. So, like, if I say, hey, what does the priest think? That's you. You're the priest today.
Does he need to do this when he speaks as well?
Hey, man, that'd be all right.
All right.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good. Okay, Mike, what's next?
When introducing a hymn, here's an oldie we dusted off. Please don't apologize for leading us in the rare song that is theologically rich and doctrinally solid.
This guy seems like a real prude.
That guy's like 104 years old, and he's been around for a very long time. So he's been in front of 85 different worship pastors, and 3 of them did this.
Ever since you guys...
And he's hated them since.
Ever since you switched to the 3-pronged equipment, it's all gone downhill.
You know, actually, I've taken a rough take on some modern worship music where I'm like, this is not theologically correct.
No, I've done that.
You know, but like, I'm sure if I sifted through the Baptist hymnal that I grew up on, I would find some that are a little iffy as well.
Here's the thing, is like, there's a lot of rapture built into the Baptist hymnal that I feel like I can't get on board with. So, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, that's an odd thing to take.
Yeah, so, I mean, wait, so, but the primary complaint was, like, should you not say, hey, we dusted this one off?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, don't say it because it's stupid. Not because it's offensive. It's just dumb.
Yeah, and once again, is like, when you do say something that like that, you're treating your worship time more as a performance, and you're basically explaining why you're doing something, when really, like, you know, I mean, if the worship is what it is, like, no one really cares how old it is or where it came from. Unless you insist on Ray Bowles or something, and then it was like, come on, man.
Yeah, yeah.
That's too many.
Hey, check out my wit before we do this one.
That's no good.
Yeah, okay.
Number five, rock and worship. Please stop. I know you've got a good drummer and amps that go to 11, but referring to church music as rockin' or using the phrase rockin' it out is somewhere in the category of fanny packs and duck face selfies.
But those two things are not the same genre of stuff.
No, they're not.
What do you think, priest?
I don't understand this list at all. I don't even understand. Why do we have issues with any of these things?
It's the list of an angry
like,
old promotion.
Why can't the guy just get up there and say what he wants and us just sing songs? Like, I just don't understand.
You don't, have you been around anyone that does any of these things? You can do better than that. I can't hear you.
I guess. Maybe there's that one guy out there that needs that little shove.
No, that's true.
I don't know.
You write an article about that, though.
Yeah, why do we have an issue with it?
Well, hold on a second, Priest Gessman.
Yeah.
Do you think, like, there's a guy in the crowd where the worship guy goes, I can't hear you, and goes, oh, he cannot hear me. Perhaps I must boost my vocals.
And then I do. And man, what an impact that had on me.
And then the spirits.
That changed my life. What if?
Hey man, there's a lot of bad discipling that goes on under the what if category. Like people are like, you know I shouldn't go to the strip club, but I have met Jesus, and perhaps someone will come in there who needs to meet Jesus, and we will look at the same naked woman at the same time, and then together I will write my ways and then lead this man to the Lord.
Yeah,
what if
you're already covered in grace? You don't need to be covered with clothes.
All right. So the priest doesn't have a problem. Mike, what do you keep going?
Okay. Here's so the first five I think were actually fairly lame and just oddball complaints. Some of these might be legitimately decent here.
Okay.
Number four, Lord, we invite you to be here. This is in the worship leader's equivalent of asking Jesus into your heart. I think I know what the phrase means, but it reveals something about our thinking related to worship. For instance, is it true that God is summoned by our worship? Or is it actually the other way around? He calls us, we then respond in worship. God isn't a genie, and worship isn't like rubbing a golden lamp. Nor is he a cosmic butler to be summoned. Don't invite the Lord into a space like he doesn't already own it and isn't already there.
What does it mean? Like, the Lord calls us and we respond in worship, but only on Sunday? Like, he's confluxing a couple things that is probably not fair to conflux, right? Like, it's not a theological problem that people happen to gather and sing on a Sunday morning. As if God's, basically his character is not a call to worship him. Like, that's a permanent thing. So, like, that's not a fair conflux of situations. That being said, it is also true that, like, we're not some of, like, the Sunday morning time isn't like a Ouija board, of which we've put the right two, like, things together, and then the Holy Spirit floats down and enjoys the groove.
Well, actually, so we sing a song, and I don't remember what it is, sometimes at church, and it's about, like, Lord, we invite you into our presence. And I'm like, I always actually have had a hard time with that. I'm like, I don't feel like I don't tell the Lord, invite the Lord anywhere, right? Like, I feel like he does what he wants, and, like, he's here, and that's cool.
But what's the revelation picture of him knocking on the door to the church to be let in?
Yeah,
that's him saying, beckoning to be let in.
Yeah, but he invited himself to the front door. It's only my job to let him in.
Well, right, but I'm just saying conceptually.
I didn't be like, come hither and knock on the door when I close it, and then I will open it.
I think, and if I'm going to give the benefit of doubt to people that I think probably love Jesus, is that it's more of a reminder to ourselves that he is present, not an actual belief that he's being beckoned. I mean, I understand the concern. But, like, in a service that is otherwise filled with people who are there to talk about, worship Jesus Christ, and to listen things that are supposed to embolden them for his work and pursuit of him and his character, I don't know, we might be getting the whip out just a little bit too easily. That's how I think about that.
Okay. Number three, God showed up. The phrase, God showed up.
What are your thoughts on that, Booba?
So it, would this be in the context of the worship pastor saying, hey, that was a great great worship service and God showed up?
Yeah, again, I think I know what is meant by this phrase. It can be a way of saying we felt emotionally touched during the music time.
Sola scriptura, that's not believable. Your emotions are irrelevant. The Lord Jesus was ascended in Acts.
Oh, so they're worried that it might purvey the message that if you didn't feel that way during the worship, then God was absent.
That's ridiculous.
You know, I think Gessman's right. We should put this on the list of articles that shouldn't be written.
Yeah.
Do you feel like this is something out of like Screwtape Letters or something?
Like, you mean like we're chasing like the wrong thing?
Yeah, this is something to distract us. Like,
oh, totally.
So next time I go to worship, all I can think about is what this worship leader's saying. And, I don't know, taking me away from the reason that I'm there. I don't.
Yeah.
I'm just going to add it to the list. Gears Wormwood get them involved in the mechanics of worship.
Well, I don't hit the how far are we in the list, Mike?
No, we got two more.
All right, yeah, go ahead and hit them up.
I've been. All right, number two. Let's give God a hand. Translation, I would like to hear some applause.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah, that's stop saying that.
Give God praise with your hands? No? What's the difference between that and saying, hey, let's sing together?
I don't know. I'm with Gessman.
Maybe that doesn't matter.
I don't want to talk about this anymore.
We've got one more. No, but trudge through.
It's really stupid.
Hey, expose the darkness.
One more. Last one. Turn to your neighbor and blank. There's really nothing wrong with this approach, but as a socially awkward introvert, this kind of instruction is this huge heaping bowl of panic attack soup.
Yeah, there's no reason for that.
We do that. Don't you say hello? It happened every Sunday I went to church growing up. They're like, you know, turn to your neighbor and say hello or whatever. I'm like, I know this guy. I sit next to him all the time.
Yeah, here's the thing is, if you don't know this person, that's awkward. If you do know him, this is a total fraudster. Hey, Bill, I know we talked 3 minutes ago about important things like your mom being in the hospital. But it's a good thing I obeyed the worship leader and said hello directly.
Although it was always the one time for the organ man to whoop out a solo of some kind, you know? Like he would play In the Garden or whatever while everybody talks for a couple minutes trying to shake hands and act like they know everybody.
So we should be honest about that. We would say, hey, Clarence wants to get his rocking on.
Yeah.
Please stand patiently and look like you're not distracted so that there's some humility to this.
Yeah.
Although, Clarence.
Get on it, Clarence.
Your time to shine.
Yeah.
God will show up.
Do you know standing on the promises? That's what I like to hear during handshake time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was it. 10 things that blah, 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 blah.
Okay, yeah, put that in the...
Yeah, let's put that on the list of articles that would never need to be...
Got it.
Yeah, okay. All right, so hey, moving into that. So we started, I think we just like a few minutes before the show started, we were kind of scanning some stuff to talk about. And I think we started coming up with a list of things that are like, hey, man, we can stop writing articles about this. Like, maybe at least put a 3-year moratorium? Five years?
Yeah, at least give us some space.
Yeah. Okay, so here's some examples of some articles that I think as a Christian culture, we can just stop writing these for a while. We're either they're stupid or they're satiated. We've got too many. All right, Michael, what's the first one?
Number one, how not to get mad when talking with non-believers.
That's not a legit article.
Yeah, so I saw this on an apologetics page came through my Facebook, and like the article comes up, and of course it's a picture of some guy real upset, you know, and the title was "How Not to Get Mad When Talking with Non-Believers," and I thought this should not be a problem. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, your job is to spread the good news of Jesus Christ to people that don't understand it, and you're having a problem getting riled up and angry and yelling at them. Like, I feel like you don't understand the good news at all.
Right. This isn't. Here's the thing: is that like if this is an actual issue, it's not a method problem. It's not that you didn't know how to approach it right. It's not that you didn't have the right talking points. It's not that you weren't intellectually prepared. It's that you're adult and that you're somehow missing the entire heart of Jesus Christ when you're dealing with other people, and you've really jacked this up, right? Like, it's easy to get frustrated with people if you're having an intellectual argument and they don't understand you. But, like, if it's completely shallow of any love for other people with the heart of Jesus that he would have for them, then, like, that's actually the root of your problem. It's not an intellectual issue with your frustration and your anger.
You know, I've been struggling with because I actually really used to love the apologetics type stuff, you know, and like I'm not saying it doesn't have its place, but like, man, like what are you having people fall in love with? Do you know what I'm saying? Like when you're people can come to Jesus through apologetics, and I'm not saying that doesn't happen, but like the first two commandments according to Jesus are love God and love His people and love people in general, right? And so like none of that can is generally achieved through a logical step-by-step basis on the existence of God, right? Unless you think that, like, for people to even start to love God, they have to logically find it to be a plausible avenue? Is that it?
Well, you're competing with the belief system, generally speaking. Like, some of the barriers, and I'll be honest, like, so these are things that if there are places where doubts and things pop into my mind, maybe it's in the realm of how are things created? How can I understand some of the natural discoveries? How does God interact with scientific things? And so I think those are legitimate barriers. People, it is innate that we seek truth because the foundation of things that God says are true, right? So I think we have an innate desire to understand truth. And so some of those apologetics arguments satisfy our desire for truth in the face of things that we otherwise, all other things that we believe are true. So I think they're valuable in otherwise eliminating distractions and having you actually deal with some of the things that you were able to write off simply because you could say, well, I think the foundation of this thing isn't true. So I think they're valuable, not necessarily in, they don't necessarily tell you who God is, but they start to knock down some of the false things or distractions that otherwise stop you from embracing the potential of that.
Okay, that makes sense. Ready? Number two of Christian articles that shouldn't be written anymore. It's okay to be a single Christian, or any variation thereof.
Yeah. I mean, that's got to stop. I swear there's like five a week. It does not matter which website you're on or magazine you subscribe to. It's like, it's okay to be single. God still loves you. Or, I'm not broken. Or, God is not upset with me because I'm not married. Like, here's what I can't figure out is who is still teaching this? Like, where is this teaching coming from? And I understand that we have a problem within our churches where, you know, some of our sermons and our outside teaching is focused predominantly on marriages and kids. Okay? Now, here's the thing. It's because most of the people in the church are married with kids. Okay? So let's recognize this isn't necessarily an affront to you, single person. It is just the nature of how many people in the church and what their circumstances are. The implication then, however, shouldn't be that because you're not married with kids, you are a failure to the Lord Jesus. Predominantly, the disciples were not married with kids. Some were, but most of them were not, okay? So, like, any cursory reading of Scripture should get you away from this particular problem. But it does seem like something that keeps coming up over and over again, and it's weirdly focused on, like, what's before the millennial generation? Or what's the next one? Are we still in the millennials? I don't know generations.
I think we're still
anyway,
millennials,
young 20s. Like, as if people are pining for, like, your life is not over. God will still use you even though you're 22 and not married with kids. And, like, they're just full of lament and hipsters. And I don't understand why this problem keeps coming up or who continues to leave. I don't think anybody's teaching it, I guess. It's something that somebody thinks and feels on their own. And so they validate it by writing an article as if other people are reinforcing it. When really it's just a thing that you need to let go of. And you wrote the article so you know what is true. Right? So this is just some sort of like self-soothing thing where people keep kicking out articles about this. And I think it's to just give it up. We've got it. We're done. The field, the bucket is full. All right? Give it like 5 years. Make sure you don't still have kids. And then come back to it and maybe get a reinforcement. But I think we can just give up on it for a while.
Number three. Chick-fil-A in general.
Yeah, we get it. I think we get it, all right?
The guy who runs Chick-fil-A, Jesus man.
Yeah, I mean, chicken's good, Jesus is good. Those two things go together like hotcakes.
Yeah.
So, you know.
There's a company run by a guy that loves Jesus, and he does Jesus-type things.
Yeah.
Stuff that people of the kingdom would do. But got it.
Every time there's a natural disaster, there's a Christian blogger going down somewhere to catch Chick-fil-A in the act of handing out sandwiches.
Yeah, you'll never believe what Chick-fil-A did. Yeah, you know, in general I do, because they're run by a guy who loves Jesus, and he does this all the time.
Yeah.
Right? Every time I turn around, he's giving out free sandwiches, or closing on Sunday, or paying his people right, or when you go there, people are friendly. And it's like, these are all attributes of people who run businesses that love Jesus, so... I mean, yeah, we got it. Chick-fil-A. Love it.
Yeah. It's time to give it a rest for like a year and a half or something.
Number four of the Christian articles that probably shouldn't be written anymore. Anything about Hollywood Christians? Look, man. I mean, I haven't seen any articles on Christian plumbers. You know what I'm saying? Or Christian dog walkers. I mean, are these guys really turning the tides for you that much that it's that big of a like, hey, look, there's a good-looking person who makes a lot of money, and guess what? They still love Jesus. Well, I would kind of hope, you know?
It's the Christian tabloid. It's the concept that, like, the rest of society has to look at who's in a relationship and who's pregnant and who's cheating on whom and all the different stuff, right? But the Christians have to go, who loves Jesus? I have to know what Hollywood celebrity loves Jesus right now, because I'm not going to find any other crazy gossip on them, hopefully, because they love Jesus, but I need to know what they're doing in their Jesus life right now.
I feel like I should buy DoWeStillHaveDenzel.com. Don't you think? You think I can make some money with it?
Yeah.
People check that every week. Is Denzel still a Christian?
Yeah, just like that. It's two sides. One is just a big green yes, and then it's a big red no. And then it just switches back and forth.
Yeah, there's a big thumbs up, and then there's like, what about Trading Day? Click here for more. He was in a scandalous movie where he used foul language, and I got intimate scenes. Is he still a Jesus man?
Thumbs up.
What's your thoughts? Yeah, we could probably do... I mean, I'm not saying... I don't know. Like, is it really that important? I mean, like, how can I say this? Like, people, it's always cool to meet another Christian, right?
Yeah.
Like, when you're in a space and you find out, like, a guy starts carrying himself in a certain way, and you're like, I bet that dude's a Jesus man.
Yeah.
And you roll over there and slide some type of half scripture at him and see what he does. And he's like, and he responds like, yeah, that's in Romans. You're like, heck yeah, Jesus man. All right. You've made a buddy and you're happy, you know? But, like, are you really making a connection with, say, Stephen Colbert? You know what I'm saying? Is it really that important to you? Like, you're going to run across him in the street and then start talking about the theological breakdown of Thessalonians? It ain't going to happen for you.
Yeah. I think we can give that up for a while. I mean, like, does somebody have a master list? Maybe we just
publish a master list of current Christian celebrities.
Yeah, it doesn't seem necessary. And, like, wait, let me ask you this. Legitimately, does it drive any decisions that you make? Do you go see a movie, not go see a movie because Denzel loves Jesus?
You know, so here's where it's hard is where I think it starts to turn tables and why people care, right? Is in general the things that we fear that Christians tend to fear and look at as not holy. We have a lot of the Christians I know and a lot of the Christian upbringing I had focused on the opposite of a prosperity, theology. Like, if you have a bunch of money, then obviously you're worshiping it and you have a problem. If you have fame, then you have lots of pride. You know, and then you have a problem, right? And so, like, when you point at a Hollywood celebrity who's continuing to follow as a follower of Christ, who probably has a good amount of money and has a good amount of fame and respect, and then they think that those things are incompatible. It's impossible to have a well-paying gig that puts you out in front and your skills are always on display and say that that's not congruent with the kingdom of Christ. And so I think maybe that's probably a little bit of the draw to it. Is like, people are like, I don't even think it's possible in that environment to continue being a follower of Christ and find out that someone has made it and is continuing to declare God as sovereign Lord. Then they're like, I didn't even think that was possible. I love this man.
Yeah, that seems dangerous anyway.
Yeah.
Right? Like you're going to take the... I want to know who's a Jesus person so that I can see how they act. And then I can maybe switch my behavior based upon what it is that they're doing.
Yeah.
The thought process? Yeah. I mean, we don't really need their influence here. So, I mean, it can be a positive thing. I just, you know, I think we can give up spending so much ink on it.
Number five of Christian articles that shouldn't be written, self-righteous advice to others.
Hey, man, yeah, this happens a lot. Dear so-and-so. Like, open letters in general I'm about done with. Like,
we had one on Dear Life from the Path a couple weeks ago that was like, Dear Internet. You know, you don't have to post every moment about your kids on the Facebook.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. It's like, I realize that you personally don't like it. I don't know if that's worth the ink to write down a personal open letter to everybody.
Yeah, like it assumes that whatever issue that you're having is universal. I don't know, it comes back to that singleness business, right? Like whatever popped in your mind must be important to everybody. And it does take a little bit of pomposity to decide you're going to pen an article and assume that someone wants to hear your response. Especially like it's generally famous people. Dear Oprah Winfrey, I have advice for you. Like I think it comes off as arrogant, and I think that we probably should give that up because at whatever point you're trying to communicate, first of all, it sounds like it's anti whoever you're talking to, right? Like there's no way you can't say when I see it on the Christian Post today had like an open letter to Ryan Lochte. Well, first of all, if you're a Ryan Lochte supporter, you're going to be upset by this article regardless. And if you were upset with him anyway, then this article didn't move you any further. You just found someone in your camp. Like, it's a trench warfare item of which to jazz people that already agree with you. And so, like, here's the deal. It's like, as long as we can admit that you're actually not trying to change the world or turn it into a better spot. You're just trying to, align people to what it is to celebrate what you think. Then okay, I guess. But, like, I don't know. It just seems like it's overdone, these open letters to people. Like, hey, maybe just write him a personal letter and mail it. See what happens.
Now, see, that's different. When's the last time you wrote a letter to somebody, Bova?
A month ago.
Like a pen to paper?
Yeah.
Okay. Guessman?
Years. I tried to start a pen pal thing going. It didn't last very long.
Wait, where did you find a pen pal at?
Oh, just an old friend. I go, we're going to write each other letters. It didn't really work
out. It didn't really pan out, huh?
No.
Did they not write back or you not write back?
They wrote back.
Oh, you didn't continue doing
it? Yeah, and then it just died.
Hey, man, I have that problem with the text messages.
Yeah.
I don't know when to stop replying to stuff because I don't want to look like a jerk and like I didn't, you know. But it happens to me all the time with Nick Harris. Nick Harris sends me a nice text, encouraging stuff throughout the week, and then I feel like I should respond to it. And then I don't know when to stop. Like, when's the right place to stop responding so it doesn't make it, you know, like we don't need to be talking about this thing all day. And so what I tend to do then is I under-respond, and then I feel guilty about it. And Nick Harris rides me. I mean, he gets upset. Nah, he doesn't. He's a good man.
You gotta let that guilt go.
Yeah.
I find it's easier just to not respond. If they really want something, they'll hit you up again.
I do that with every phone call. Every phone call. I just assume that if you didn't follow it up with the text messages or another phone call half an hour later, whatever you're calling about has been resolved. I can move on. Know that if you're calling me.
Number 7.
Okay.
Of Christian articles that shouldn't be written anymore, Obama is a Muslim.
Yeah, I think we can. That's done.
I mean, at this point, does it really matter? I mean, what are you even fighting for? I mean, it just, he's not going to be president anymore, okay? I don't care whether you like the guy, don't like the guy. Whatever, just drop it. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, I don't, we fight a lot of things for self-vindication. Like, let's say that was the thing, right? We figure it out. Obama, he's a definite Muslim. He's got like a, it's on his driver's license. Barack Obama, comma, Muslim, all right? I doubt that. But let's just say that happens. What did that do for you? Like, the man's still the president.
Yeah.
The world is still turning. Jesus is still sitting on his throne. So, like, I just don't know what you're, I don't know what the deal is. I don't know what you're fighting for here.
No. Here's the deal. I think I'd really like to meet Obama.
You think so?
Yeah. I don't know. He seems like a nice dude. I mean, I can't say I agree with the stuff that he does or I sit directly in his political camp. But, like, I don't know. We could probably sit down and have a coffee and a burger or something.
I think that's all right. Yeah.
People get all riled. That's the thing. It's like just because they don't agree with somebody's politics or something, all of a sudden the guy's the devil. You know what I'm saying? Like he murders puppies in the backyard and then vandalizes the White House secretly. You know what I'm saying? Like that's way too far, right? You don't agree with him, okay? You know what I'm saying? But like in general, I mean, he seems to be pretty happy. Smiles at people, says hi and stuff. I mean, he's at least got the basics down of getting along with folks.
Yeah. Okay. I'll see if, hey, he's not gonna be in the White House, after a bit.
Yeah, hit him up.
See if he'll come on the show.
If you want to come over lunch or something.
Okay.
I've lost a lot of fans. I get you. I realize you ain't a big fan of the guy. I'm just saying, like, he doesn't seem like that, like a jerk like you're saying. So, keep that in mind.
Yeah. I'm not sure he's the mastermind of all things quarrelsome.
No.
I think, here's the deal. It's like, sometimes people solve problems in a way that you think is not productive at all. That's the nature of disagreement. I'm just not sure it's always influenced by, you know, evilness. It's just disagreement.
Yeah, you just don't like what the man's done.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
You would have done it differently. I get it.
Number 8, the gospel according to, quotes, anything. There's a ton of Christian articles this way. The gospel according to blah, 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 the Passion of the Christ. The gospel according to Metallica's Black Album. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're looking to squeeze the gospel message out of it does not matter what. This folding chair. You know what I'm saying? They're like, this is how this folding chair represents the gospel and Christian in general. And like, you know, we could just go with the words that Jesus gave us. I mean, he took the time to sit on a mountain and talk to people for a bit. Maybe we should try to soak that in.
Yeah. That's the question. It's like, we spend a lot of time trying to point out how something which is not claiming to represent the gospel represents the gospel. And that just seems like a fruitless exercise, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Hey, here's something that isn't the Bible, that is not trying to be the Bible, that you're trying to point out is not the Bible. And I feel like, yeah, I think we got that down. It's just I could solve that in one sentence. Not the Bible. Moving on.
Christian articles that shouldn't be written anymore. Number 10, 10 things worship leaders shouldn't say. And it made the list.
All right. Well, yeah. No, I think those are all right. I'll keep on. Maybe we can add to that list as I peruse Christian articles. What was? Oh shoot! I thought I had another one that I thought of while you were talking, and now I don't recall what it was. It had something to do with Billy Graham. People are like cycling content from Billy Graham, like Billy Graham's dire warnings for the future, and it was from like 1982. And I'm like, you know, if it was, here's the thing: if it was true in 1982, which if I remember the article, it was. That's not a like. It's just a true thing. Like, we don't have to say dire warnings for the future. He said something true in 1982, and is also true now. And so we'll just say Billy Graham's true stuff. Dateline today. That's the end of the list?
Yeah, that's it. That's 10.
Okay.
Here's the deal. We didn't have a whole lot of substance going on today.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? We've attacked two top 10 lists in the first half hour. I don't know. It's been a low substance week. Why is that? Does nobody have anything going on?
No, I got quite a bit going on.
You got nothing to say?
I was trying to think if there was anything in particular that I was struggling with. So I've had something going on. Like we're starting a house church, and like there was a lot of I had to tell the congregation that I'm in and that I'm one of the pastors for this week, and. I was real nervous about it, and I wasn't nervous about it because I think I'm doing the wrong thing. It was just, I don't know, parting is tough, and finding the right way to talk about it, the right way to think through it, and kind of moving to something that's a little bit foreign was just kind of a nervous thing. And frankly, I get anxious talking in crowds and that kind of thing anyway. And so the whole week, I was kind of trying to prepare for something that had always made me anxious, and it is even worse in like kind of a bigger event. And it was difficult because I talked to some people afterwards who were kind of surprised that I had any type of anxiety or anything about it. And the thing was is that like it comes from a spot where like I don't know how to explain it. Like I didn't trust that God had it under control or that everything was fine. It was just like no matter what I did, I still had some kind of level of anxiety about it. And I think I'm at a place where I'm like, it's okay. Like, it's not this may become an article to make the list if you give it another couple years and it persists. But like, Christianity sometimes, at least modern Christianity, has not dealt well with anxiety, depression, that kind of thing. Like, we don't talk about it in a healthy way. We act like it's just a lack of faith thing. And I can tell you that having going through some of that stuff myself, especially when it comes to anxiety and stuff, it's not rooted in any particular doubt or lack of faith in Jesus. It's just a present thing in my life. And anyway, so I was talking to some folks after kind of the sermon this week and talking through that, and I think it hits a lot more people than I think we recognize. People who are ashamed and who are worried because they have anxiety in their lives or depression in their lives, and they hear the scripture that says, you know, hey, don't worry about this, God will take care of you, and the presence of those things makes it feel like we are sinful for having those types of things in our lives. And like, I actually came to a place this week where that anxiety kind of felt healthy to me, and it ended up being all right, like a little better than it used to be, but it felt healthy to me because it reflected the right look at a situation. So, like, my worry isn't that God isn't good. My worry isn't that God won't handle things or that things aren't otherwise under His control. It's just there are right reflections of impacts of things to people and occurrences in life that could positively or negatively affect folks, or like just changes. And those are things that I think if we're to understand a God that looks down and says, "I mourn for the sin of my people," He has a point-in-time reaction for things that are going on around it, and it seems appropriate. And, like, some of those things that are in our lives, I think we can also look at it a healthy way and say, yeah, those are appropriate reactions to things. It's when you dwell on them and start, I don't know, pulling God off His throne a bit and making weird decisions based upon unhealthy worries. I think that's when stuff starts to go weird. But you notice, you remember when Jesus says, don't worry about tomorrow. He says, today you have enough to worry about. So it's like not worrying. It's just focus on the stuff that's within your kind of within your purvey here, as opposed to spreading it out among things that you can't control and kind of loading it on an impact of which it does not have the power to go beyond. So anyway, I guess that's kind of been on my mind, but it was something that I've been trying to work through myself on. How do I how do I look at anxiety or nervousness in situations that are otherwise, that I just don't feel like I'm having, struggling with a faith issue with God. Like, I know he's got it under control. I can say that. I believe it. But it doesn't change really how my body is reacting to things or kind of the things that you think about. And I think it's just because, I'm not sure we're being called to push away completely those reactions to things. It's just, don't let them go beyond their borders. Don't let them, don't cause something that you are rightfully worried about today to control your next 2 weeks. And so just, you know, let them live within their own houses as opposed to letting them kind of, you know, take over your land and pillage your village.
Yeah, Tessa Johnson was in here a month or so ago, and she was talking a little bit about this. And it really is kind of a bigger, you're right, it'll be the new buzz, like in the next year, about Christians with anxiety and stuff, that we haven't treated it appropriately and treated it only as a lack of faith issue. But see, here's the thing. This is where I have a hard time with this, is because some of that is actually true. It is a legit problem and needs help. And then some people just like to dump their worriedness crap in that bucket.
Yeah.
And then it really is a lack of faith problem, right?
Yeah,
I want control of this. This is outside of my grasp and I don't like it. And like, this is outside of the things I control and I don't like it. And like, I think that is just having a healthy view. And really what it boils down to is the thing we've been talking about the last couple of weeks, is just pursuing God honestly. You know what I'm saying? Like, God will vet out whether it's something that you are lacking trust in him with, or it's just something that you have, that as part of a fallen world and a sinful place, like, sometimes your body just, it's against you, right? Yeah. You feel a certain way, and you're like, I don't believe that. And your body's like, yes, you do. You have to poop now, and it's worrying you. And you're like, I don't feel like I should be worried about this at all. And I'm owning this, and it's not mine to own, and I'm not stupid. I know this is not, should not be sitting me, on me this heavy. And your body goes, yeah, it should. And then you got to poop again. And then it's a real problem.
Yeah.
And that's your body only has a couple ways to revolt against you. One is pooping, the other is baldness. So other than that, you know, you kind of control the thing. Or it can start growing one fingernail longer than the other. I mean, outrageously longer for no reason. My body hasn't done that to me.
That feels awkward.
But I've read the Weekly World News. But, like, in all actuality, like, some of that should sit on you and some of it shouldn't. And, like, if you're having an honest conversation with God and you're pursuing him, he will help you sort it out. Like, he'll say, you know, you'll either get a peace through you that says you weren't trusting me and now you are. Now you can put those burdens down and not deal with them. Or, like, that burden came with your sinful, fallen body, and I will do my best to hold your hand through it because I love you and you're my son. And you come to me when this shows up, and I will lighten that burden. I can't say I can take it away from you completely, but I will lighten it to the point where it's tolerable, and then there is glory to me and joy to you, and I can promise that. That is a promise. And so, like, we can deal with that in a healthy way, but sometimes we go straight to the back massage, oh, woe is me thing, before we said, hey, look, man, you just deal with God on this deal. I'll help you through it. I'll talk to you about it, and we'll talk about it in a healthy way so we can figure out whether you need some legit medical help, which does happen,
yeah,
or you're just carrying around a giant sack of Cry Me a River, and that needs to stop.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that kind of well describes where your issues are be. Like, you're either trying to carry things that don't belong to you. If they're God's issues, then you need to let them go, right? If the things that you can't control that God's to control, then stop trying to take stuff that belongs to God. Stop worrying about things that are, like, worry about things in the time in which they're appropriate to worry about, but don't let them flow out of their borders and become things that otherwise control time frames in which they don't belong. So, like, it's not such a nature of being anxious, like never being anxious or never worrying or never being concerned about things. Those are right reactions to sometimes the world around you. It's just, are you letting them live outside the boundary? You're trying to carry things that you otherwise shouldn't be carrying. And really, I think, you know, where I've been helped is kind of thinking through that and praying through that and saying, all right, you know, it's okay to be nervous proposing to your wife. It's okay to be anxious about a significant life choice that will alter your destiny. But it just can't continue to happen, you know, months on end. Like, make your decision, get it taken care of, and then after that, you're gonna have to let it go. Now it's beyond. Now there's no time, and it doesn't make sense to keep worrying about it anymore. And so just kind of let those, figure out where the boundaries are, and ask for God's help to kind of keep them within there, and then rightly process it, as opposed to saying it's bad if it's present, it's fine if there's nothing there. Because frankly, I'd be more concerned about, like, people that have no anxiousness about, like, crazy big things. Like, it makes me wonder, are you processing it correctly? Or, like are you looking at all the different ways in which this could impact someone? Or you're just, like, you know, ballyhoo outside off the mountain, with one of those flight suits. And maybe that's not healthy. Maybe there's something that says, hey, maybe I should take a look at my surroundings and see how, you know, my decisions impact everybody else. And then I have a reaction to that.
Yeah, that's true. Like having a – being lazy or having a emotional capacity of, say, a twig, that is not faith in Christ, right? You're like, nothing shakes me. I trust Jesus with this thing. No, you're just a cold-hearted snake. Yeah. And you don't feel. That's why you don't care, and that's why you're not worried about it. That is not faith in Christ. That just makes you a mannequin. And so, yeah, you got to watch out for that.
Yeah. Like there's at some times when we say things like his faith never wavered, what we really mean is Ted didn't give a damn.
Yeah.
And like that's the reason we think that he's stone cold, but really he just did not care.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
He's a psychopath.
Ted, you snake. All right.
You ready for your life?
Yeah, let's hit it up.
Okay, we're getting into show on this since it's been a real barn burner around here. Buva, Guessman, or this wooden statue, you guys can jump in anytime. Here we go. Dear Life from the Path, my 62-year-old mother is living in a small town with little to offer her. She says the only reason she stays is because her job provides benefits, and she's currently going through physical therapy. Mama's single, has no potential prospects, and no social life outside of church. Her friends are all married or have moved away. I feel like she's not living her life fully, and I wish she could find the courage to leave. How can I convince her to be okay with the unknown and move to the big city?
Wait, does she want to leave?
It doesn't say whether she wants to leave or not.
It certainly doesn't sound like she wants to leave. It sounds like this gal feels bad for her mom when her mom doesn't feel bad. And she wants her to go and live her life somewhere where her mom would probably be more unhappy.
What do you mean it doesn't have anything to offer her? Like what?
A sweet movie theater?
Are we particularly talking about single dudes in their 60s?
I mean, here's the reasons that she has to stay.
Okay.
She has a job that provides benefits.
Sweet.
That's why I work where I work.
Yep.
She's currently going through physical therapy. Obviously, that can be done throughout the country. That is not really a stinger.
Yeah.
And she has no social life outside of church. There's me as well. So, you know, should I move? Am I in the wrong place? City slicker? Should I go to San Francisco as well?
Hey, yeah, the standards of which most people would say, this is what you do to live a normal, productive life, this person's looked at and said, it's not enough. My mom is suffering.
Yeah, I mean...
What makes the church not a social arena?
I mean, it is.
It really is. This gal just... It sounds like she's just... She wants her mom to live a life that she wants, rather than what her mom wants.
I feel like she's not living her life fully. What does a full life look like, really? Ponder that one. What about... Ask that wooden statue. That's a big, heavy question.
Yeah, Priest Guessman, what's the right definition of a full life?
Oh, buddy. That's a big one. Physical therapy.
check.
A church community. A job with benefits.
Sweet. This lady's check, living check, it.
Man, that priest Guessman knows what I'm saying. I was looking for something way deeper than that, and he really brought reality.
Wisdom. Yeah, I don't...
So the question was, how can I convince her to be okay with the unknown and move to the big city? I mean, my advice is, don't do that.
Yeah.
Try this. If you, let's just clear the slate and say, hey, Ma, do you like where you're living? Answer, yeah, I think it's all right. Well, great, I'm happy for you. I'll come visit on occasion. Now, if her answer is, no, I think I'd like to move to the big city, you say, well, do I have a deal for you? And then take her to the big city. That's pretty easy. This seems easy.
Yeah, I don't have any. Yeah.
Agreed.
Thank you, Guessman.
Yeah, I think it's just, hey, Mom, how are things going?
Yeah.
How's life? All right.
Yeah.
And then you move from there.
Are you all right with having no potential prospects?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like this person put themselves in their mom's shoes with their desires and then said, I'm unsatisfied with my mom's life.
Being 62, that would be awful for them, and so therefore it must be awful for her mom.
Yeah, I mean, she is 62. She's not senile 95 where she can't be like, this is the only physical therapist in the whole country. I've got to stay here. It's a hub. It's a hub of physical therapy.
Yeah, there's no way she
thinks possibility that there's one in San Francisco.
She's the best physical therapist in the world.
Wow. Here's Secular's advice.
Okay.
Does your mother plan to be receiving physical therapy in perpetuity? If not, be patient. Wait until it is finished and find out whether her job offers vacation time. If it does, invite her to visit and show her what the big city has to offer. If she can't get away, you may have to entice her by sending her videos of all the fun things she could be doing if she lived close. I can't guarantee it will work because it's possible she's happy with her life the way it is. However, if she's not, It might be an effective way to whet her appetite.
There's some honesty in that. Your mother may be happy, but just in case she's not, entice her with some videos of some sweet sculptures.
Hey, man, my mother-in-law sent us... I mean, there had to have been 30 to 40 brochures of Colorado. I think in an attempt to get us to move there. Like maps. Like not just like touristy brochures, but I mean like driving maps. As if I might move to this county, and I needed a way to navigate around. And so, and it was very awkward. Like, we're not moving to Colorado. And so, like, it was weird. It was just really, really, really weird. I didn't quite know what to do with it. Like, I can't keep them. I don't have, like, a magazine rack or anything. Anyway, I was not enticed to move to Colorado by someone sending brochures. It seemed like passive aggressiveness.
You could make one of them Chinese fans out of them. You know what I'm saying? Like, put them all together at the bottom and then fan yourself with them.
Is there like an origami thing on the net? Tell me how to do that.
No, I just use a stapler.
Hey, man. But, hey, speaking of stuff on the net, I saw a video on Facebook where someone made a pizza with tater tots as the crust. I did that today, and it is really good.
Do you guys
don't tell me about that.
It's really good, Fuba.
Don't tell me anymore.
Do you ever make the tachos? They're like tater tot nachos?
Yes.
Oh, man. They're really good.
You ever had a family size walking taco?
Like in the whole bag of Doritos?
Yeah.
No?
Me neither.
All right, cool beans.
Just pulling the room.
I said that so we can end this ridiculous food conversation.
Just
see
what's up.
All right.
Here we go. Ready? Dear Life from the Path.
Yep.
What does it say about my ex-husband who has been paying storage fees on household items ever since our separation and divorce over 20 years ago?
What?
Is the whole thing?
What does it say about him that he continues to pay storage fees on household items? Maybe he's forgotten. This is a problem with automatic bill pay. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, remind him that he has a bunch of stuff in a storage unit and see if he goes, wait, what?
Wait, yeah. No, wait a minute. Is that the whole question?
Yeah. Yeah, what does it say about him?
What does it say about him?
He's either forgetful, he doesn't care, or you care too much.
Well, yeah, you've been divorced from this man for 20 years. What the heck do you care?
Why do you know about that?
Yeah, do you call him on the weekly and be like, are you still paying for that storage shed? And then go, ugh, and then hang up the phone?
This is why we divorced. And then hang up?
I mean, yeah.
You may be too invested.
He's either a very rich man that does not seem to notice $65 flowing out of his bank account every week and has forgotten it completely, or he has nowhere else to store his Ted Comes Alive album. And so he's just like, it's got to stay. I mean, what's in there? Is it like an old couch? Like with the brown and red floral prints? Because, I mean, if that's it, then yeah, there's something wrong with him. Maybe he just likes to give out money.
Wait, I mean, I don't understand the circumstance in which she knows this or cares.
Well, and truth of the matter is, how do you know the stuff that you put in there is still in there? Maybe he got rid of it all, and he keeps like a weight set and like some kind of boxing pad in there.
He's got a jet ski in there. He's way cooler since he left you.
Yeah, right. This implies that she's going in there and like checking it out.
Yeah, you don't know, lady. You stopped being able to get that information when you divorced him. Yeah. And so you never know what he could be printing T-shirts in there.
Yeah, the only thing you should know about if you've been divorced for 20 years is if you had kids and how they're doing. That's it. You don't need to have that kind of relationship with a man that you've been divorced to.
Could you ask your dad about that storage unit.
Yeah.
See if he's still got stuff
in
there.
Hey, Jimmy, how's college? Hey, does dad still have that storage unit, and does he have my plate set?
Yeah, he could be cutting cocaine in there. That's none of your business.
That was a big jump, but all right.
No, yeah. I think this is that's a stupid question.
Let's see what Secular says. Yeah. Secular's advice is, what it says to me is that your ex is unusually sentimental, and or can't afford it.
Yeah, he pines over the end table.
Yeah. P.S. And why, after all this time, would you care so much that you would write to me about it?
Agreed.
Yeah, that seems odd. Why would you need to farm out an opinion of the man? Like, can't you just, if it's weird, just, I mean, think it's weird. That's fine. I mean, do you really need, are you so self-conscious that you need someone to back up the fact that you think someone else is weird?
Well, I feel like you've had strong enough feelings and emotions for this guy to, A, marry him, and then strong enough emotions again to divorce him. I don't know why you're shying away from what you might think now.
Yeah, hey, just call him. Hey, Larry, why are you still hooked on that end table? You're a dirk. Yeah, done. I think we solved that one.
Wow.
One more.
Okay, last one. Here we go. Dear Life from the Path, I work for a small company where I am privy to a lot of confidential information, and I know the owner is letting the business die. All of the experienced senior staff have quit because they recognize what's going on, but the new hires think this is normal. These are self-supporting young adults with college loans to pay off. One is a dad with a young child. I feel so guilty looking for a job while everyone else is clueless about their future. Because it's part of my position to know how we are doing financially, I can't tell them or they will be out of, that they will be out of jobs soon. Or can I? Keeping a secret.
No, you can't. But you can tell. Talk to the owner and tell him to straighten her out. Like, encourage him to do it. Help him do the right thing.
I mean, what if he doesn't? Can the right thing be done?
Here's the thing. He's like, like, this is all based on this dude's opinion, right?
He looks at the financial records. It's going in the toilet. Don't act like it ain't.
No, it can be rescued.
It can't. You don't know that.
Yeah, there's a smart financial moves that will put this back in order. Top five financial moves.
All the senior staff quit. He looked at the financial records. He's like, this place is going in the dump. He can tell.
Yeah.
You would not feel obligated to tell anybody?
I think your best play is to try to get the owner to do it. Like, how did he describe the owner again?
He didn't.
You know what he said?
He said the owner's letting the company die.
Yes.
Here's the thing: if I discussed it with the owner, that's who I'd talk to first. And if he's like, I'm letting the company die, and I refuse to tell anybody, then I would start telling people. But
just
I would give
being a stubborn oaf about it.
Yeah, I would give him the chance to do it though.
Would you do? I think we've answered this question maybe once before, where someone said, like, if you knew someone was going to get fired, would you tell them?
What did we come to then?
I don't remember.
Was it wisdom?
Probably not.
I think I'd tell him.
Why would you tell him?
I mean, what does it matter? Because the company really wanted to save up and be part of a grandiose moment? I would just be like, hey, man, they're going to let you go.
It's not yours to tell.
What? Well, I mean, who makes those rules?
What if they go, well, I suppose if you didn't care if they fired you because you didn't follow the protocol or whatever.
Yeah.
So as long as you didn't care about that, I mean, it's not a moral problem. It's just like your job is probably out. But if you don't care about that, I suppose I don't care.
Yeah, I'd jump the gun and tell a guy, look, man, they're going to let you go.
Yeah, so actually, maybe that's the right question. Maybe it's not like a macro moral problem. It's he might fire you for doing that. As long as you're okay with that trade-off, then it's simply just a decision to make.
Yeah.
It's not an overloaded one. It's just like, here, this is the likely consequence. If you accept the consequence, go ahead and tell everybody.
Yeah, and we'll see how much that your self-righteous indignation comes up. Like when they say, when it comes to the question, look, if you love these people this much, the young startup adults, and then the young dad with kids, that you put your job on the line to tell them that the company's going down the tanker and they probably best get on out. If there's a high possibility you'll get fired and you do it anyway, then you did it for the right reason. If you chicken out of it because you might get fired, you didn't really care that much in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, you better be right about it, though. I mean, like, if you might end up tanking the company by saying what you're saying. So unless you, like, are dead certain, I'd be real careful about that.
Yeah, because all your workers are going to leave at that point in time, and then you definitely have tanked it.
Yeah, maybe the guy's rebuilding. Maybe he's going to do an IPO, and he didn't tell you because you're obviously a snitch.
That's
and
true.
Can't be trusted with
so
it.
So, again, go talk to the owner.
You're kind of a gadabout.
Yeah.
Maybe you should just quit. You know, if you feel this way about the company, maybe you should quit and just go work somewhere where you don't feel this way. No, yeah. Don't cause waves there.
Yeah. I mean, there has to be a point where, like, maybe you're just not right. And so, like, as opposed to taking down the whole world with you, maybe just you don't work there anymore.
No, I've run across this situation a couple times the last couple months where people have been talking about jobs and they're like, my job makes me do this or doesn't let me do this, blah, 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 blah. And I always come to the conclusion that, like, hey, man, you know, you don't have to work there. It's not a prerequisite for employers to cater to your whim. You signed up to do that job. You've agreed to do these things, and now you don't want to do them, and you're like, this is unfair. My job makes me do this. Well, the truth of the matter is, like, it's not fair for you to ask them to change the job for you. It's fair for you not to take that job. Right. You shouldn't have been working there.
Yeah. Just don't work there anymore. If you don't like the terms of the work or whatever. But here's the deal. Like, who's to say that these, I mean, do you know, are you just assuming that these guys are running down the wrong path? These youngins are like, maybe they know what they're getting into.
Yeah, that's true. Everyone graduates college and says, I hope I go work for a dying company that fires me shortly after I start.
He doesn't know how soon they're going down.
Man, you know nothing of this. The man obviously feels like there's impending doom.
Yeah.
And you, based on no information, assume him to be a liar.
No,
I just think he's a worrywart. He doesn't really know.
Here's Secular's advice. Much as you might wish to, I don't recommend that you spill the beans.
Yeah.
If you reveal proprietary information to the other employees and you signed a confidentiality agreement with your bosses at the time you were hired, as many employees do, you could be sued.
That's true.
There's no moral answer there. That was just don't get yourself with financial liability.
Well, yeah, I mean, here's
that sounds like a secular answer.
Well, are you willing to pay $200,000, $300,000 for breaking your confidentiality agreement?
Hey, man, you can't get no blood from a stone. Go ahead, sue me. We'll see what happens. You might own half a dog. That's the best I can offer you.
So you're saying the poorer you are, the more morally right you can be.
Absolutely.
With no financial repercussions.
They always say that the worst guy to deal with is the guy that's got nothing to lose. I sure fit that category. Sue away.
Yeah, I know. That's a good point. All right. Hey, you're listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging with us here tonight. We appreciate it. If you've got you need some advice, shoot us an email, info@livefromthepath.org. Unless you need some advice on how to put on a sweet and entertaining radio show, and then we may not be able to help you. To see past glories, however, you can go to lifeinthepath.org, catch out clips from the show, including the musical clips from JC from last week. She did an awesome job. Light 45. We had just a lot of good talent in here recently. So we'll keep fishing more, see if we can get some other folks to stoke the airwaves so you don't have to listen to us. In the meantime, please be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.